Greetings and welcome to the Journal of Southern Religion podcast. My name is Art Remillard. I'm the book review editor for the JSR and I teach at St. Francis University in Loretto, Pennsylvania. Today's podcast originates from the annual meeting of the American Academy of Religion held this year in the great city of Chicago. Joining me now is Emily Clark, a PhD candidate in religion at Florida State University and managing editor of the JSR. She's here to talk about a piece she wrote for the most recent volume of the JSR. Emily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Art.
Okay, so 1973, great year, I'm born, something else is happening. Something else is happening at our beloved Florida State University. Tell me about that.
So 1973, what's going on? A group of FSU religion professors began thinking about what is the South's distinctive culture. And this is what they call it in their grant application, that they're wanting to investigate the distinctive culture of the South. And so what they end up developing together is what they would call the Center for the Study of Southern Culture and Religion. And the advisory board was mainly FSU religion professors, but not scholars of the South, just scholars who lived in the South, who from living, you know, in the regional ethos began to think there's something unique going on here, especially with the growth of the Sun Belt, the population moving more into the South, the population and industry growth. How does this affect the religious growth of the South? And so they wanted to get together and put together a center that would specifically investigate this. Early on, they got a little bit of money from FSU. With that little money, they did some pretty cool stuff. They brought in Harvey Cox and also Sidney Ahlstrom for colloquia, but they wanted to get more money so that they could fund doctoral research, which led them to applying for a bigger grant, the Rockefeller Center's grant, and they got that, which, you know, $100,000 in the 70s was a good chunk of change.
Absolutely. Is now. So they started producing a bulletin. Can you tell us about how you found out about this bulletin in the first place? Because that's an interesting story. And then what kind of things did you see when you sifted through this?
So the bulletin was something that they started printing after they got the extra money from the Rockefeller Center. And they wanted to make what was going on at the center, the people who were coming in and giving colloquia, the research that they were funding, they wanted to make that accessible to a broader audience. Hence the creation of the bulletin. Now, how did we find the bulletin? Well, in the summer of 2010, the religion department was cleaning out the section of the basement that we lovingly call the dungeon, which is just storage, and we found these folders that had the grant application and a lot of copies of the bulletin, which made their way to John Corrigan's desk, who then gave them to me and said, read these and figure out what's going on.
Did you have a hallelujah moment whenever you opened these? Like, oh my goodness, look at these names, look at what they're talking about.
More so, I opened it and thought, wow, this is a time capsule. This is a time capsule of Southern religion. What was going on in the 70s? Who's coming and talking? What are they talking about? What's different about the study of Southern religion then and now? And yeah, I guess a hallelujah moment.
What is the difference? I mean, what were they doing then? What are we doing now?
The big focus that you see in a lot of the bulletin articles and the talks that were given at the center is that there's definitely a focus on Protestants. If you do a statistical analysis of all the topics that are covered in the bulletin, it is overwhelmingly Protestants. There's one book review on Jews in the South. There's a short article on kinship amongst the Creeks. There's a little bit on Catholic sensibility and writers, but it's mainly all Protestants. And I think that's something that the field has begun to move beyond, is to see some diversity in the South. Though at the same time, near the end of the bulletin's tenure, you have a essay from Sam Hill, who I can only hope to someday have a career as long as his, talking about religious pluralism in the South. So even though there is this focus on Protestants, there's acknowledgement that there's more than just that.
That's bringing up Sam Hill, that's a good point, right? So he brings the seminal book for those of us who do religion in the South. And it seems to me that a lot of the books that we're still talking about came out of this time period, and they were reviewing these books. So what were they saying about these books, and did they really kind of forecast the mark that these books would make?
In some ways, they definitely did. The book review that was published in the bulletin on Al Rabiteau's Slave Religion is a book review that was longer than some of the articles that ran in the bulletin. There was much to be said about the book itself, about the state of the study of African-American religion in the South, and it was all correct what it said. the reviewer, I'm trying to remember who it was that reviewed it, but they guessed that Slave Religion would go on to become a pivotal book for the study of Southern religion. The same thing about Donald Matthews is Religion in the Old South, that these would be books that would be continued to be read by future scholars. And, you know, both of those books were on my comprehensive exam list in 2011. They are texts that continue to shape the way that we think about religion in the South. And so, yeah, it was a time period that there was a lot going on.
Did you get a sense for the circulation of the Bulletin and just in general the impact of this center in dictating the conversation of religion in the South?
The Bulletin at its height, because when the center applied to try to get more grant money in the early 80s, this time they were unsuccessful, they had a whole appendix that was about Bulletin readership. And they guessed that at its height, the circulation was around 800 copies, which is pretty good, I would say, for a small bulletin that's being published in-house by just a group of guys interested in religion in the South. The appendixes in this grant proposal is great because it includes feedback from readers. They were asked in one of the issues at the end to fill out this comment card and send it back to the center, more or less. And you see James Cone talk about how he thinks the center is great. You have the current AAR president writing in and saying that he enjoys reading the Bulletin. You also have Southern pastors and ministers who are filling out this comment card and saying how they love reading the Bulletin because it helps give them a historical or scholarly backing to what they talk about to their churchgoers. So it had a really broad readership beyond just other scholars, but mainly just like the guys who started the center, the religion professors like John Carey and Richard Rubenstein at FSU, that just from living in the South, you get interested in Southern religion.
That happens. Speaking as a Yankee who lived in the South and got interested in Southern religion. Well, so it runs out of gas in 1981. They lose funding. Do you have a sense for you know, how that worked out, how that all shaked out?
You know, not really. I'm not entirely sure why in 1981 they wouldn't be able to get funds anymore. They were successful in the 70s in the midst of the recession to get grant money. So why in 81, when you have the beginning of the real rise of the moral majority, which is often associated with kind of a Southern religion ethos, why then would they run out of money? You know, Sam Hill in his bulletin article on this strange career of religious pluralism in the South, he points to the kind of Southern feel of the electronic church, that all these televangelists that are becoming more and more popular seem to just have a Southern feel about them. And so with this really taking off, you know, the electronic church is huge in the 1980s. Why would there not be an interest in funding research on what that Southern feel is, or what does that Southern feel mean? Where does it come from? So I'm not entirely sure why they ran out of money. I guess it's good that the JSR popped up in the late 90s.
Well, I mean, do you just find that delightfully ironic, right? That the JSR comes back and it takes over a decade till we discover that there was the center here long ago and nobody really knew about it.
Yeah, I would love it if Sam Hill would tell us about how he was working with the Bulletin, how he got his article in it. I know Paul Harvey said on Facebook that he remembers that Bulletin back when it was originally being published. So we'll have to ask Paul about that.
Well, he's here, so we will have to track him down. Well, let me ask you this. So you read through these. You wrote up this really nice summary of them. What light did this shed on your own research? And obviously, to answer that, tell us what you're doing and kind of give us that story.
So my own research, I'm looking at religion and race in 19th century New Orleans, specifically how religion helped mediate the racial, social, and political changes that the city went through during the 19th century, specifically the transition from a tripartite racial system of slave, free black, and white to a neat, clean, Jim Crow black-white binary. So I guess in terms of, you know, what this can help, what light the Bulletin sheds on my own research, is it is nice to see things that were a little bit ahead of their time. There's an article in the Bulletin on cockfighting and performances of masculinity in the South that was a bit surprising. That was not an article.
Clifford Geertz.
Yeah, it was very Clifford Geertz, and at the same time, very Ted Ownby. It made me think of subduing Satan and how masculinity was something that was performed in the South, and it had a particular way of trying to negotiate the praying South and the fighting South. And so that article seemed a bit ahead of its time, and it helped point to looking at issues of gender. So how I see this kind of impacting, you know, my own research, I would say looking at the Bulletin, reading its articles, the insights it has are more historiographic than anything. You know, it's kind of an old saying when you think about historiography that books, that works of scholarship are a product of their own time. And think about how the context is shaping what's being researched. And so when I think about, you know, the great strides that Southern religion, the study of it, has made from going beyond Protestants, beyond just thinking about race as slavery. If you talk about slavery, that means you talked about race. If you talked about women in your scholarship, that means you covered gender. And instead, you know, we've moved forward where race means more than just blackness, and gender means more than just women's experiences. And the Bulletin kind of had its finger on this early on, and we've really gotten to see it blossom in the last couple of decades of scholarship. So I guess I would say the insights are more historiographic.
Well, very good. With that, we will conclude this podcast. You can read Emily's article as well as selections from the Bulletin of the Center for the Study of Southern Culture and Religion at our website, jsr.fsu.edu. While you're there, you can read through the rest of Volume 14. Thank you to Emily Clark for joining us, and thank you for listening.